I'm Johnny B. Good, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We compare national parks to movies a lot on this podcast, and that's mostly because these places have a larger-than-life vibe and atmosphere that truly looks like something out of a film.
Or like something from another planet that can only be replicated through the magic of Hollywood. But no park is as much of a cinematic star as the one we're talking about today, which is Redwood National Park in California.
It's actually officially called Redwood National and State Parks. And that's unique because this part of coastal North California is a network of numerous state and national park sites jointly managed by the National Park Service and the state of California.
Yes, and altogether, these soaring forests have totally soared to movie stardom over the years, appearing as the backdrop for some pretty serious blockbusters. And I mean, it makes sense. These trees are truly otherworldly. What with its skyscraping trees, misty beaches, and fern canyons. So I get why the redwood forests are like catnip for movie directors.
That's also what made this park such a fun place to visit, and even better to experience as part of a family vacation.
Redwood National and State Parks may not have dinosaurs and Ewoks like the movies would have you believe, but it's still an out-of-this-world place to visit. Hi, I'm Matt.
And I'm Brad. This is Parklandia, a production of iHeartRadio.
We sold our loft in Chicago, moved into an RV, and now we're traveling the country full-time with our dog, Finn, exploring America's national parks. And today's episode is about Redwood National and State Parks, which is in Northern California. So for some context, we first visited these parks as part of a late summer family vacation with my dad, sister, brother, and his then-fiancée, now wife. And if you remember when we talked about that same family trip for Lassen Volcanic National Park in season one, this Redwood trip was the other part of that trip. And even better, for this part, we're bringing my brother on as a special guest later in this episode. So super excited to talk to him. That was a fun time, and it's going to be a fun chat.
It absolutely was. So Redwood was the first park of that vacation, which took place in September and started with a day and night in San Francisco. Then the next morning, we got up early and drove our rental car up the coast for a few hours to get to this beautiful national park.
It's honestly a pretty easy drive, pretty straightforward, made all the easier by how ridiculously scenic it is. At the time, this was pre-RV for us, and we were used to road trips through the Midwest and the Chicago area, which is mostly pretty boring and flat and monotonous, so I was not prepared for how delightfully entertaining just the drive would be, honestly.
Yeah, we even got off the highway and stopped for lunch at some cute diner in Sonoma, which was beautiful.
Yeah, it was this quaint, gorgeous little town called Healdsburg, which, incidentally, I had been there for a work trip literally like 2 months before we stopped here for breakfast. The hotel I was staying at was like 2 blocks away or something from this very diner. And I remember being like totally blown away by this coincidence. And everyone else in the car was like, oh, okay. And then had no reaction. And I was like, okay, that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, no one else was on that trip with you. So it's hard to relate.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. The silent reaction was deafening. But the food was really good. just like homey American food with bottomless mugs of coffee and those really dense ceramic mugs that you really only find at roadside diners nowadays.
My favorite kind of place.
Yeah, we were just like having this diner conversation the other day, actually.
We were.
Yeah, because we have very different diner preferences. I think we like different styles of diners.
We do.
I'm more of like the modern, kind of sleek, contemporary approach in terms of both design and like food. I like inventive stuff.
Like lox bagels and things like that, right?
Sure. Things that are like kind of gussied up versions of like Americana fare, I guess.
Yeah, mine's like two eggs poached, bacon, sausage, rye toast buttered, and hash browns.
Classic.
Not home fries. Don't get it mixed up. Don't get me started.
You get all
but I'm just
up.
I'm so easy. I'm just so simple when it comes to it. I want an old school diner, like the fun, like just what it is, face value.
You know, I respect that.
Shoot, throw some ketchup on my hash browns. It's fine. I don't care. I'm not going to do that because I don't really do that anymore, but I used to do that.
I've never done that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I hear you. So from there, from this diner, it's another like 4.5 hours north to the National State Parks. And that's a bit of a drive. But like we said, it's super scenic and very, very pretty. So as long as you get an early start from, especially if you're leaving from the San Francisco area like we did, you'll make good time.
Oh, yeah. It's really not that far from the Oregon border either. It's way up there.
Yeah.
But the further north you drive, the greener everything gets.
Yeah, and the mistier things get, too. It's all very cinematic and immersive. And it really does feel like you're gradually disappearing into, like, a different universe. Like a universe envisioned by Steven Spielberg or something. It's like you're going to a movie, and I have expected to kind of gradually transform into a CGI character myself.
Or to see a dinosaur leap out from the forest and start chasing us down the road.
Yeah, and then it would, like, bite off the side mirror of the car while we all screamed in terror. Exactly.
And eventually, though, we didn't see any dinosaurs. We saw a lot of Bigfoot signs all over the place.
Yeah, lots of those. This must be, like, prime Bigfoot territory because we saw tons of Bigfoot, like, Bigfoot crossing signs, Bigfoot warnings, even, like, Bigfoot-themed businesses and cafes and things like that. They're really, like, capitalizing on the fictional, like, Bigfoot stuff. And I can totally see it, too. This seems like the type of setting for a giant, mysterious Neanderthal.
Anytime I think of Bigfoot, I think of Bigfoot from a Goofy movie. Remember that scene?
Yeah. I'm almost offended that you even felt the need to ask me that, if I remember.
True.
Of course. I have that movie, like, memorized scene for scene, basically. And it was very formative for me in my early years. And if I'm being honest, it's still formative for me now. Like, I continue to learn from that movie and grow with it. And that Goofy movie, Bigfoot, is, like, my go-to.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, of course. I mean, it doesn't get much better than Bigfoot. He was a gentle giant, really. He just wanted to listen to headphones and dance.
Yeah. And maybe, like, maim Goofy and Max had he gotten into the car. The movie never really explained, like, what the intent was or what the real threat of Bigfoot was. Because he was trying to break into the car,
yeah.
Right? That's the whole gist. And then Max, flings the headphones out of the car and they land on Bigfoot's head. And then he just starts to dance and lose himself to song. And that's when they're, you know, able to, like, eat spaghetti or whatever. I don't know.
Whatever it is.
I don't know what happened. Yeah. I guess I don't remember scene for scene because I'm, like, really spiraling here. But
I think it's just you're nervous. But again, this is, it really shows how cinematic this part of California is. Everything either looks like a movie or reminds you of a movie or it is a movie.
Yes, which is another reason why I'm so excited to have my brother on later for this episode. He's the biggest movie connoisseur I know, like, by far. So I think it'll be interesting to get his insight on this park.
Trees.
So contrary to what we might be leading you to believe, this place was not drawn into existence by Disney animators. So the parks that comprise this system include the actual national park portion, which was designated in 1968. Along with Del Norte Coast, Prairie Creek, and Jedediah Smith, all three of which are state parks. And when they're all combined, they contain about 140,000 acres of America's most iconic trees and forests. Most iconic. There, I said it.
Yeah, that's a big statement, but it really fits. America has a lot of iconic trees, but these ones definitely stand out.
Yeah, literally. They stand way out. They're enormous. I think their closest, like, size-wise trees are sequoias, which are also huge. They're wider and they have more volume, but they're not as tall as redwoods. Redwoods definitely grow taller. They're the all-natural skyscrapers, And I would go out and say that redwoods are the Sears Tower of trees. And I know that you and I are biased because we're from Chicago, but no. I still firmly believe that the Sears Tower is still the most iconic skyscraper in the nation. And I refuse to not call it Sears Tower. I know it's technically Willis Tower, but it'll always be Sears Tower in my heart.
You're one of those. I love it.
Yeah. I mean, hey.
Team Sears all the way.
Yeah.
And not only are they the tallest trees on Earth, but they are also some of the oldest, some as old as 2,000 years old.
So even though they're not actually the largest trees by volume or the oldest, they're distinctly special and obviously iconic.
Especially since they grow to be almost 400 feet tall. The Park Service doesn't point out which tree is actually the tallest in order to protect it from visitation crowds, but the tallest tree is, I believe, around 380 feet tall in the Redwood Creek watershed. It's called Hyperion.
I love the name. It sounds like a superhero. And they grow this big because of all the constant moisture and precipitation, including rain and fog, coupled with the region's temperate climate and average temps that range between 45 and 61 degrees year-round. So it's just the most ideal environment for trees of this size. Plus, their bark is so thick, like up to a foot thick, that it's a great natural defense against forest fires and disease.
But you're saying 12 inches thick.
Yeah.
12
That's
inches.
How thick their bark
1 foot
is.
Thick.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
That is
it's crazy. Bigger than my foot.
yes. And in case you were wondering how these enormous behemoths aren't constantly toppling over under their own sheer size, that's because their roots reach up to 13 feet deep and 80 feet long. And they need to be this big in order to protect against weather and wind and such, and just their own, like, mammoth size.
So 13 feet deep, that's
yeah.
mm-hmm. more than twice the size of me,
right.
Or you.
Mm-hmm.
That's you and I put together plus an extra foot or two.
Yeah.
That's just absolutely insane how big those are.
Deeply rooted.
But unfortunately, most of these trees have been logged over the years. Today, the national and state parks protect about 45% of all remaining coastal redwood trees, which is definitely alarming.
Yes. Yes, it is.
History.
In the mid-1800s, which is not even that long ago in the grand scheme of things, old-growth redwood forests covered more than 2 million acres along the Northern California coast. Obviously, that number has dwindled drastically, thanks to loggers, to the point where 140,000 acres is nearly half of all that remains, which is terrible.
Yeah. Yikes.
Yeah.
In the early 1800s, this part of California was home to Native Americans, with tribes like the Yurok and the Wyot peoples, who respected the forest and used it in sustainable ways. They've been doing it for as long as 3,000 years.
Absolutely. Even though they did cut redwoods to make boats and housing, they weren't going nuts by desecrating entire forests.
No, like no. One tree would make a
one
lot
tree,
of boats.
For sure, that goes a long way. And you're using it for necessity, like what you need and nothing more. But they also had serious respect for these trees all the while. Like a tribal elder from the local Chilula tribe, Minnie Reeves, she was quoted in 1976 as saying her people are people from within the redwood tree. So there's clearly a deep spiritual connection mm-hmm. there. And she went on to add a pretty blunt warning, saying, destroy these trees and you destroy the Creator's love. And if you destroy that which the Creator loves so much, you'll eventually destroy mankind. Which, oof.
That's heavy.
Yeah, that's a heavy warning.
But it definitely needs to be said.
Yeah, because according to this statement, mankind was really just a couple 100,000 acres away from being destroyed by the Creator.
Mm-hmm.
Really pushed it to the brink.
And that's because massive trees like these eventually caught the attention of lumbermen who basically started using these vast forests as their giant ATM.
So greedy. It was a salvation effort after gold miners initially flocked to the area but failed to strike it rich that way. So they figured they would turn to what they saw as the next best thing, which was logging the abundant redwoods. And considering there were major metropolitan areas developing nearby, like San Francisco, there was huge demand for large supplies of wood like this.
Logging continued for several decades until the 1920s, and that's when conservation started to step in. This is when the Save the Redwoods League created this batch of three state parks, which was able to stop the rampant logging.
What a great name, too. Save the Redwoods League. They sound like Avengers or something, like tree-hugging Avengers. And I get it. And since the national park designation requires so much more red tape and federal finagling, not to mention that World War II was keeping the government pretty busy, Redwood National Park didn't formally become a thing until 1968. And then together, this quartet of jointly administered parks, which I'm going to go ahead and call the Fantastic Four of parks, because I think that fits.
Yes.
They protect what's left of the coastal redwoods. Although terrifyingly, by this point, almost 90% of these trees had been logged.
Yeah, it's shameful and sad to see so many people didn't see the beauty and the importance of these forests. They only saw dollar signs.
And it's not even just the trees themselves. The forests they comprise are hugely important and protect threatened wildlife like Steller sea lions, Chinook salmon, and northern spotted owls. Altogether, these ecosystems are so unique and geologically important that this part of California was classified as a World Heritage Site in 1980 and an International Biosphere Reserve in 1983.
It's always nice to see a happy ending. And when we come back, we're going to talk about our road trip to Redwood National and State Parks.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has skeletons in their closet. Mine certainly does. Ones that go back 100 years and reach thousands of miles back to our hometown in Sicily. Ever since I can remember, my relatives told the story of my great-great-grandmother who was killed by the mafia. I'm Joe Piazza, and in my new podcast, I'm taking on a generational vendetta, visiting the scene of the crime, confronting mafia experts, tracking down Italian officials, and even consulting mediums to set the record straight on my great-great-grandmother's mysterious disappearance. And in between the fact-finding missions, I'll be drinking a lot of wine and eating all of the pasta. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Matt.
And I'm Brad. This is Parklandia.
And today we're talking about Redwood National and State Parks in California. For our experience at Redwood, everything was perfect. I don't want to sound all happy-go-lucky and twee, but that's exactly what it was. The weather, the time of year, the minimal crowds, the scenery, everything just worked and it was all perfect.
It was gorgeous. It was late September and the summer rush was pretty much over. The parks get about 500,000 annual visitors, many of whom just visit through June and August.
Right. But once kids are back at school and vacation is over, that's when we opted to go. And it really worked in our favor. We started with the Kuchel Visitor Center, which is the southernmost visitor center along the coast, just off US 101. It's easy to get to in an absolutely beautiful environment, too, with the misty ocean right there, lined with rocky shores and small islands scattered off the coast, and it's speckled with sea logs here and there, too. It's just a beautiful place to start your trip at Redwoods.
Yeah, this is definitely not the type of beach for swimming. It's the total opposite from the beaches of Southern California, that's for sure.
Right, but super beautiful to stroll along and gawk at and take photos. I actually much prefer these beaches to Southern California, I would say. I'm team NorCal when it comes to, like, the beaches and coastline.
Mm. So we picked up our visitor guides here and bought some souvenirs, and you and your brother got your passport stamped.
Oh, yeah, we sure did. And Whitney did, too, our sister-in-law now. I love saying that. She was on this trip. She was my brother's fiance. Now they're married. So now I can, you know, reminisce fondly.
Absolutely.
And her and my brother were recently engaged on this trip. But as of this recording, they're recently married. So it's still a delightful novelty to call her Whitney Kerouac. Still pure delight and happiness. And I'm also really glad that we were able to persuade her to join in on our national park passport obsession. So,
which I have not. I'm living vicariously through all of you because I just can't. I can't.
Well, you'd
just
be too far behind at this point, too.
That's rude.
Sorry.
I'm kidding. No, I would be because I just don't have all the stamps and stickers. And
yeah,
so
right.
That'd be like a big investment. Mm-hmm. But there's also a film about the park, some museum exhibits, and a picnic area here, too. And then from here, we went on and got settled from our rental home for the next few days. Your dad had set up this house rental on Airbnb or VRBO.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, not far from the visitor center area, which is in this town called Oreck.
Yeah, our house was more inland from this part. We were pretty much in the thick of, like, the coastal redwood forest, which was so great. Great, like, an awesome place to hole up for a few days. A real show-stopping vibe. And the house was amazing. Do you remember the house?
Like, oh, yes.
Oh, so, like, paradise. And just, like, so bucolic. And really, it was constantly surrounded by massive elk, too. It was, like, something out of a woodland fairy tale. And again, with like the movie vibes, just perfect.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't constantly surrounded by elk. That would actually be terrifying and dangerous since Roosevelt elk can grow up to about 1,200 pounds. But we did have a few elk sightings in the backyard and from a safe distance.
Yeah. My dad actually got a few great elk photos.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Yeah. I think one of them is still the background image on his phone. Like one of the elk he saw.
Oh, my goodness, it is.
This kind of ominous looking elk, like in the misty morning fog. It's great. The animals were a big hit.
Perfect.
And elk are a big deal at Redwood, too. They're easily the most iconic of all the wildlife species that live here. But definitely do be careful and keep a safe distance, of course, because unlike woodland fairy tales, these animals will not sing and dance with you and weave you dresses or whatever. They'll trample you if they feel threatened.
Yeah, that's good to prepare our listeners, but we shouldn't scare them either.
I mean, it's a fine line, and I'm here to blur it. But yeah, the house was absolutely bucolic and perfect, like I said.
Trails.
We basically just dropped our stuff, got changed, relaxed a little, and then we drove down the road to do a little hike. And we did a portion of the Redwood Creek Trail, which was completely breathtaking.
It really was. We didn't do the entire trail, which is about 15 miles round trip and back, but we did hike along the creek for a few miles and just basked in the glory of these huge trees.
It's such a peaceful setting, especially when it was as sunny and mild as it was when we were there. And I loved every bit of it, especially when we were all kind of spread out and dispersed along the creek at one point. We started skipping stones. It was like just like something out of, you know, a dream. This perfect, like, babbling little brook, and we didn't even talk about it. We weren't like, let's start skipping stones. We all just kind of branched out and started doing it. And I haven't skipped a stone in I don't know how long. So this was fun, and also a nice reminder that I'm still not good at it. I don't know how to do it.
True. And then we scrambled up this huge fallen log and took some great group photos together. Yeah. I remember having to, like, jump up there and, like, run and jump. Like, I mean, it wasn't an easy log, but it was a good one.
Yeah, the tree was so huge that we really had to, like, leap and then drag ourselves up on it, but totally worth the effort, too.
Yeah, it was perfect. And you know what was even more perfect? Our kayaking trip on the Smith River the next morning.
Oh, my God, yes.
River.
I'm going to go out on a limb here, like a huge redwood limb, and say that this was the most fun I think we've ever had kayaking in any national park or any setting in general.
I think that's accurate. It was definitely one of the most dynamic and most action-packed from some of the rapids, the hiking excursions on the riverside. We did a lot.
And I remember on the way, too, as we were being driven to, like, the load-in point by our kayak guide, he was saying that Netflix movie Bird Box was filmed along the river here. And I never saw that movie, but I love imagining like a blindfolded Sandra Bullock kayaking down the river with us.
Another great example of how cinematic this place is. We're just constantly surrounded by it, even when we're not totally sure what it's about.
Yeah, right. So this kayak trip was pretty much everything. All of us loaded into our individual kayaks, and we set off for a few miles down this crystal clear, perfectly blue river, like the cleanest and prettiest river I think I've ever seen.
Seriously, it was gorgeous. You and your sister almost capsized when you hit these like rocky rapids at first, and then I crashed my kayak into yours.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a pileup. Things got wet.
And things got even wetter when Whitney fell off her boat when we were all stopped at a big rock in the middle of the river.
Yeah, I remember hearing just this splash behind me, and then I turned around and saw Whitney standing up out of the water. And I knew how cold it was, so I really felt for her, even though she was really chill about it.
Yeah, and from up on this huge rock, our guide told us that we could just jump off of it into the river. So each one of us did that one at a time. It was a pretty big leap, too, probably like 15 feet.
It was high up there. It was intimidating and very nerve-wracking. But, like, the river is so pristine that it's the type of water you definitely want to jump into. And I was scared at first, but I had to do it, obviously, even though once I did finally do it, as soon as I hit the water, I was filled with freezing regret, and I, like, swam as fast as I could to get out of the water. It was so cold. He did not properly warn us about how cold it would be to jump into.
No, he did not. I remember when I, like, did this front flip, and everyone was like, oh, wow, that's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And then I saw the replay. I'm like, I definitely looked cuter doing that in my mind.
Well, I thought you looked perfectly cute in real life doing that.
Oh, good. Well, that's why we don't record things like that. You just flip it from memories, forget like...
Oh, wait, I have that on video. It's cute.
No, you don't.
I do.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I did record it.
I know
it.
You do.
And you were brave because you were the first one to go.
Yeah. I guess we'll have to put that on our Instagram page.
Oh, yeah.
That's, Pod, right?
That's going out there, yeah. So, yeah, that was an intense experience for sure. And then from this portion, from this giant boulder swimming excursion, we paddled pretty much to the other side of the river and then all kind of parked it on the shore. And then our guide took us into the woods for like a little side hike.
Ooh, is that when we heard about Hiker's Lemonade?
Yeah. So our guide told us about this herb that grows in abundance in these types of forests. And it gets a nickname, Hiker's Lemonade, because it's edible and refreshing. And I think it tastes like lemonade or something. Taste lemony?
It did.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And
it was weird.
Oh, gosh. Like, yeah.
Because it did. It tasted just like edible lemonade.
It was a revelation. He had us all try it. And I remember, like, my eyes, like, did one of those cartoon things where they bulge out of their out of my head because I tried it. I'm like, wow, this is amazing. So
it really was. Like, I have a video of you behind me, like, picking up the Hiker's Lemonade off the ground and continually eating it along the whole entire trail.
I was grazing like an elk. Just like walking through the forest, grabbing Hiker's Lemonade by the fistful, shoving it into my mouth. It was so good.
It really was. I mean, it wasn't a long trail either, but it was a beautiful one because you know that's one that people just don't go on unless they're kayaking and know about it. But when we got to the end, it was really cool because I remember he goes, oh, yeah, circle around. I want to get your picture. And then he turned it to pano mode and went up the tree line and did a pano picture. I'm like, you're a genius.
You're clever.
You're working for your tips, honey.
And we didn't even tell him to do that, did we? We didn't ask for a panoramic shot, but he just
knew.
That was not his first rodeo. And yeah, because the redwoods can be hard to photograph because they're so tall and it's almost impossible to get them all in one photo.
Oh, yeah.
So
you have to be very far away.
You do. And you gotta, panorama helps. So that was great.
When we come back after this short break, we're going to bring on our guest, Brian Kerouac.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, Centratech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has skeletons in their closet. Mine certainly does. Ones that go back 100 years and reach thousands of miles back to our hometown in Sicily. Ever since I can remember, my relatives told the story of my great-great-grandmother who was killed by the mafia. I'm Joe Piazza, and in my new podcast, I'm taking on a generational vendetta, visiting the scene of the crime, confronting mafia experts, tracking down Italian officials, and even consulting mediums to set the record straight on my great-great-grandmother's mysterious disappearance. And in between the fact-finding missions, I'll be drinking a lot of wine and eating all of the pasta. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Matt.
And I'm Brad. This is Parklandia.
And today's episode is about Redwood National and State Parks in California. All right, so we've definitely talked a lot about movies so far this episode, and that's not just because this place reminds us of a Goofy movie or because our kayak guide was talking about Bird Box. Lots of big movies are actually filmed here in the various Redwood State Parks, as well as nearby sites like Muir Woods National Monument.
Yeah, the setting is pretty iconic, so it's perfect for movies like The Lost World, Rise of the Planet Apes, Star Wars Episode VI, Return of the Jedi, all of which filmed here. I think the most popular of all these is the speeder chase scene from Star Wars.
Definitely popular. And how can you not love the Ewoks? They're less intimidating than Roosevelt Elk, that's for sure. I think my favorite, though, is probably The Lost World, and not only because that franchise is one of my favorite movie series ever, but because all the forest scenes are filmed here. Plus that terrifying sequence where the T-Rex pushes the motorhome over the cliff. Ugh.
I'm just glad a Roosevelt Elk didn't push our RV over a cliff here.
Yeah, really. Okay, first of all, that movie scene is insane, though. Can we just talk about that? Because I remember seeing it for the first time in theaters and how vividly it stuck with me, like watching it. And then also like when it was on video or whatever, years later, I watched it at my Nana's house too with her. And she's such like so sweet and meek, and seeing her reaction to this like really graphic scene where the T-Rex like shoves a motorhome off a cliff.
Oh, yeah.
She's like, oh, my. And I'm like, I know. It's like really shocking and intense. And it's always been, I think, one of my favorite, most memorable scenes from movie, probably ever, still. Like, yeah. That movie came out in, like, 97, and here I am 20-plus years later, still remembering it and loving it. And after our time here at Redwood, I think even more so, because we were, you know, it was filmed. This is where that scene was filmed, and doubly so, because we're now living in an RV, in a motorhome, so.
Except ours isn't as nearly large or fancy as the one in the movie.
No, but theirs was brutally destroyed, and Julianne Moore almost died when she crashed into the glass, so I think we're fine. And I also think this is a great moment to bring on our guest for this episode, my brother Brian.
So Brian, how are you doing tonight?
I'm great. Thank you for having me on your podcast.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It was such a fantastic trip to the Redwoods, and there was so much. There's so much to enjoy, to commemorate, and it's such a beautiful, historic, and cinematic national park.
Yeah. And I feel like, honestly, we've talked and mentioned Brian on this podcast enough that I feel like he's the third host in a way, like already.
We just mentioned him enough. Because Finney is always first.
Well, Finn's the third host, and Brian, I guess, would be the fourth host. It's a full house.
Well, that's very nice of you to say.
I mean, it's true, because aside from after Brad, you're the person who I've visited more national parks with than anyone, probably by far, like from childhood up until today. So, and you were the person who got me obsessed with the National Parks Passport, which then, you know, I tend to be a very obsessive person. So I spiraled rapidly out of control. And that ultimately kind of led to this. So I guess I should thank you, because none of this probably would have happened.
I had no idea what introducing you to that passport book would. Never in my wildest dreams did I envision it would spiral into this. Yeah. I was just like, this is an interesting thing that he would probably like. And I was right. I had no idea.
I was right. And now, I really took that and ran with it. And that was our first family national park themed vacation that we started doing. That was a few years ago. That was in 2016. And Dad suggested doing this outdoorsy kind of trip with our sister Emily and me and you and him. And that was it was the four of us on that first year where we went to Yellowstone and Grand Teton.
Such a beautiful trip.
It was very formative. And that was where both you and I got the National Parks Passport in Grand Teton. So I went crazy with it. And here we are. Was it next year? Was this trip the next year? Redwood and Lassen Volcanic? I think it was.
Yeah, it was.
Okay. So the cool thing about that was you and I were both kind of deep into our national parks fascination at this point. We had been stamping like crazy. Mm-hmm. And the thing I loved most about the Redwood trip in Lassen was that this time we were able to bring Brad and Whitney along with us. So our group and our family is expanding.
Yes.
It was beautiful.
It is true.
Yeah, I love that.
I love it too.
Earlier in this episode, we talked about how you two were newly engaged.
Yeah.
And now you are married.
You're newly married. Yes.
Newly married. And so
it's true.
Used Whitney Kerouac. It's just weird. It was different.
So I feel like we've had a lot of different important steps in our relationship followed almost immediately by trips to national parks, which has been nice.
Yeah, that's a nice theme. I like that. So this was great. And
actually, sorry to cut you off, but what did national parks really mean to you, Brian? What does that bring to your life?
Yeah, let's get right to it.
Oh, wow. What do they mean to me? I mean, aside from just being beautiful nature preserves that are just, I don't know, rare to see anywhere. I've always looked at them, to put it in the stupidest way possible. I'm big into video games, right? So video games have certain levels or certain areas of the world that are vastly different from the other. And it's always a lot of care goes into creating them from the game developers. But national parks, I go to them this is a world in a game, which I don't know, maybe that says something about me that I have to
I love it.
Compare actual nature to fantasy video game stuff, but
I love it.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's incredible that something like Big Bend National Park, mm-hmm. it's I can't believe this desert world is part of the same country or map that Redwood National Park is.
Yeah.
With these giant trees. You go and it's I can't believe this is the same world that these two things are at. And I don't know. I love experiencing that. Just
it's true. Literally, Matt will go and say, it's like this Disney ride.
Park. Yeah.
And, you know, by you referencing it to games, it's absolutely true. We all have our different ways of referencing national parks. And that's really the beauty of them.
And we do it with we compare it to Disney a lot. We also compare it to movies a lot, which really fits with Redwood. But also, like, I've been comparing lately in the video game thing, like, certain roads in parks especially, I think I'm like, oh, this should be a level in Mario Kart.
That's so true. See?
Okay, cool.
Well, I love it. Well, and in this adventure, bring it back to the earthly realm of where we actually live.
In California,
we started this all off in Chicago.
Oh, sure.
Well, for us, it started in Chicago, but where did you start this trip from?
So we started from Boston. Dad and Emily met us at Logan Airport in Boston, and Dad, Emily, Whitney, and me flew from Boston to Chicago, where we met you guys at the hotel connected to the Chicago airport, and we spent the night there.
And then we all flew to San Francisco, where we would start bar hopping, because obviously we love to indulge in drinks.
So, yeah, first things first, we basically just drop our luggage off, and then we're like, okay, which bar first?
and then sprint to the nearest bar.
Yeah. And we went to Trick Dog, which is an amazing cocktail bar.
I'm obsessed.
Yeah, it was. Then didn't we walk from there? It felt like
we did hours
we walked from there to get to the next place.
But. The Tiki Bar, right? Yes. Didn't we walk from there to the Tiki Bar?
Another staple in cocktail world.
Of course.
Smuggler's Cove.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's like one of the pinnacles of Tiki Bars, I think, in the entire country. And
really?
Yeah, so we're obsessed with Tiki Bars, and we're like, well, we got to go there. And we, I don't think it was close at all, but
no, we thought we're like, oh yeah, we'll just walk. And
no,
then
it wasn't.
Oh my gosh, this is the horrific time when somehow I was the person taking us, and then I got us lost, and
then my
phone died. And I remember being lambasted by somebody in the group, like mad at me because I got us lost. But we did end up walking like 15 minutes out of the way.
that was really on all of us because you showed us the map you were following, and like we all looked at it and we're like, yep,
yeah, so we're like, that checks out, yeah.
None of us wanted to take responsibility for the map. So
no.
I can navigate national parks, but somehow I can't navigate cities.
Well, also San Francisco is a very confusing city. It's not laid out in like the same way like we're used to with Chicago, where it's like a very straightforward grid or anything like that. San Francisco's like zigzaggy streets and like hills and a lot of craziness.
Yeah.
So we had to process that, but we made it there. We made it to Smuggler's Cove.
Yeah, we found a cozy corner in the little basement there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that place was like a Disney ride. It was like
that
the line for Pirates of the Caribbean or something.
Yes, it really was. Like this dark, very alluring place. Like feels like you're in like this cave by the sea. And also like there's an upstairs and a downstairs. And you go inside. It's jarringly dark. Your eyes need to adjust. And then you also need to be careful not to fall down the stairs because they're right there.
Yeah.
And that's a liability. But we made it down and had a blast. It was so fun. There was like a little waterfall there. And
It felt like pirates could just walk in at any moment.
And I would have been unfazed. Yeah.
Absolutely unfazed.
Like fine, like not angry ones, but
good ones. Yeah. Like what's Johnny Depp's character? Captain Sparrow?
Jack Sparrow.
Jack Sparrow, yeah. I would have been like,
you asked
that
question, but you knew it.
Well,
you were just trying to lead in, getting some answers here. I see what you're doing.
Halfway through that question.
It's a good interview tactic.
Yeah, right? Now, after San Francisco, it was a beautiful drive to Redwood.
I mean,
it was absolutely stunning. But before, we, of course, had to stop by what bridge?
Golden Gate Bridge.
See what I did there?
Yeah. I, for some reason, completely forgot that right now.
You used his own tricks on him.
I did. Yes. He was so excited.
We did stop by Golden Gate Bridge. Which, I don't know if you both know this, but Golden Gate Bridge is its own national park site.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Golden Gate Bridge.
I did not know that.
Thing. Yeah, so it's like Golden Gate National Heritage or something.
Yeah, we'll something like that.
But,
and you can see Alcatraz from right there.
Yeah.
Literally.
We got to go to Alcatraz. Yeah,
we do.
Mm-hmm.
I always think of like Prisoner of Azkaban, like Prisoner of Azkaban.
Well, that was clearly
I always think of Azkaban too.
Yeah.
But I feel like Azkaban is clearly modeled after Alcatraz. How is it not? Like the name sounds the same. It's the same format. It's like this prison in the middle of an angry bay.
Right. Let's get these Harry Potter references in here.
I mean,
Emily would approve.
I'm here for it. I'm ready.
Keep comparing real life things to fantasy things.
Yes. And, absolutely. It's the whole theme of this episode.
Yeah.
So, we saw like sunrise at Golden Gate Bridge.
We did.
That was gorgeous.
Early. We had to get up really early for that. And that was planned.
We did.
It wasn't a mistake.
No, that was planned. All. And then, so we got some photos there and then drove the rest of the way, which was a sizable drive. I think from San Francisco up to Redwood, it was like 5 hours or something. But we woke up super early, so it wasn't that bad. And the, like we said, like the drive is really scenic and pretty, so you don't really mind it as much. You're driving through really like scenic terrain and the trees get greener and greener and taller and taller. And then all of a sudden you're like in the redwoods.
And it's gorgeous.
Grand finale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember the drive being bad at all. I'm trying to remember.
No, because it was gorgeous.
I really don't remember the drive. Yeah. It was a delight the whole way.
Yeah, it really was.
It really was. I want to fast forward here just a little bit and really just dive into Redwood, because there's so many ways that you can discover your parks, travel to your parks, find your parks. And so Redwood, we get there.
Yeah.
And what do we do?
Well, the first thing we do is we go to the visitor center, one of the visitor centers. We go to Kuchel Visitor Center, which is right along the coast. And it was a very beautiful day. And I feel like it was like such a quintessential day in the Redwoods, like the fog, which is probably there all the time, but it was like sunny and foggy and nice and crisp. It was probably like, I don't know, 60 degrees or something, really comfortable. And we get our passport book stamped, obviously, big priority. First things first.
Check.
Yeah. And then we do that. We go to the house.
Oh, that house was stunning.
At the Dream House.
The name of that area, was that like Elk Meadow Lodges?
I wouldn't be surprised because it was surrounded by elk.
Like I was trying to remember it today, and I went onto Google for like Redwood National Park, and I saw that posted, and I clicked on it. It looked like where we stayed,
and it made sense
given what we saw. So.
It was just heaven. It was a small house. It wasn't anything big, but it was just dreamy.
No, oh gosh, it was so good. Like living room, a spacious kitchen, and like dining area that was kind of split into the living room. Nice little back porch. I think there was a grill, but I don't know if we used it.
No, we didn't use it.
No. And then
but there's a
few bedrooms.
Perfect place to play our favorite board game.
Yeah. So this
trip, pop quiz, Brian, what is that?
Trekking across the U.S.
Ah, trekking the national parks, but
okay.
Close.
Close.
Hey, at least you knew trekking. That's really what matters, though, trekking.
Right.
I knew that trekking was involved.
Trekking was involved.
Such a fun game.
That's the best. And also, it's just obviously perfect to play that game when we're literally staying in a national park. So we just, I remember playing that at least one night. We all gathered around the table, played trekking the national parks, probably had a bunch of beers, local California beers. And then we mostly just like cooked, we used the house because the kitchen was like fully stocked and full like everything. And it was great. I loved it there so much. It was really comfortable,
was
really nice. Great location. It was close to a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a little community, a bunch of little houses in there. Felt like, I don't know, felt great.
Yeah, I know. So we were there for at least a few nights, I think. It was a good anchor place to be for our time in Redwood, which started with, we did this trail. We did the Prairie Creek Trail, or part of the Redwood Creek Trail, like right away. We dropped our stuff off and then hiked for a few miles in.
That was the one that was just like a flat trail, like on a road
that
going out?
Yeah, that was pretty easy and straightforward. And that's the one where, at least like the point where we turned around was at one of the kind of creek crossings.
Right.
Where there was a bridge and we all like gathered for a group photo on top of this giant fallen redwood log.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we were skipping rocks.
That's great.
A lot of rocks skipping.
Yeah, we were talking about that earlier in the episode, and it's just such a beautiful memory to have. Such a great trail.
I also liked how we all just quietly, no one talked about rock skipping, but we each kind of quietly just started doing it. And I feel like it was an unspoken competition to see who could throw rocks the furthest or skip. I couldn't throw them at all. Like,
I don't know.
They didn't skip once.
I feel like Brian would be a little bit competitive here and be like, I bet you I can skip farther than you.
I take great pride in my ability to skip rocks.
I mean,
I'm not ashamed to admit that.
And Brian definitely did beat you.
I mean, yeah, that was loud and clear.
I don't want to put it out there so people like want to compete with me when they do it, because I want it to be like kind of on the down low that I'm okay at it.
You want to surprise people with that.
Sorry, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Brian is really good at skipping rocks.
Yeah. Right.
And then when we were done with that trail, either that day or the next day, that's when we went on that huge kayaking trail.
Oh, yeah. That was bright and early the next morning. We all got back into the rental car and we drove. This was like to the northern part of the park. I remember it was like a little bit of a drive in the morning, but that's where Smith River is.
Yes.
And such a pretty river. So pretty. And we all met up with our kayak guide who then like had us pile into his big van. He has, you know, one of those long vans where you can have storage items and have a bunch of people corralled inside of it. And he drove us to this drop-off point where we all convened and got into our kayaks and got into the river. And it was such an incredible day. That was like the most fun I've had kayaking probably ever. I think most of my kayaking anyway has been on lakes and stuff like that. So it's fun to do it in a river where it's like dynamic, constantly changing scenery.
Yeah, and this river was pretty wide. It wasn't like a small river. And
no.
I remember it was like that perfect day where it wasn't too chilly, but like I wore a jacket because I thought it would be a good idea. And just over the river and just over your head, you just had a million little flies.
Oh.
And, you know, you could just see them and they hit you and everything, but it didn't even matter because it looked like it was gorgeous. It was stunning. It was like this fog of flies.
I don't remember that.
I think I remember. It was like this activity. It was like the fizzy stuff above a soda. That's what it felt like.
Yes, that's exactly what it felt like.
It's like a carbonation cloud of flies.
Oh.
Yeah, and it didn't bother us. See, it didn't even bother you.
I didn't notice
that. Remember it.
Yeah, so I remember like early on within the first like 10 minutes of being in the kayaks, there was like a little bit of a pileup. We hit some, not rocks, but like some mild rapids, I guess. And like Emily was first, our sister Emily was first, and she kind of like careened to the side. And then I like slammed into her.
Yep.
And then Brad slams into me. And you also like fell off your, you were not into the water, but you were like kneeling on it or something. So you like fell face forward onto the top of your kayak because you hit me.
Oh, that's right. Because I was on my knees at that point. I was trying something different. Yeah. No, I was trying my different like kayaking stances because it was like an open face kayak.
Oh, yeah. Right. The one that you could sit on top of or kneel on top of. And that was fun.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's always great for a good kayak pileup.
Little kayak pileup. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember that and thinking like, well, that's the closest anyone's going to get to falling in on this trip.
But that was... That turned out not to be the case.
Yeah,
right.
I thought that too soon.
Yeah, let's talk about that because I was talking with Brad before this about you capsizing.
Yeah.
And he didn't remember. I think he was probably too far back in the group, but I was right in front of you. And I remember hearing it and turning around and be like, oh, you're in the water now.
I really think that's when I was posing on a rock.
Probably.
I hope so. I feel like the situation was pretty chaotic. Like whatever was happening, there must have been some like light rapids we were in. And I feel like, didn't Emily like throw an article, like her jacket, like up in the air or something?
What?
Somebody lost an article of clothing in the water.
Oh, she did. Oh. Yes. No, she did.
I remember.
And down the river, somebody found it again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Which was lucky for her.
Yes.
Very lucky. Yeah.
My experience during that time, so it was in Light Rapids. I don't exactly know how it happened. I just remember at one point going down this kind of rapidy part of the river. I just like something, I must have bumped out of my kayak and I started like, I felt myself slowly like rolling out of the kayak and falling back into the river. But it happened incredibly slowly, like slow enough where you think that any person doing this would have plenty of time to correct what was happening. But I just watched like my feet on the kayak and I just watched them go higher up into the air until I fell backwards and was completely submerged.
Jeez.
It also made me realize that trying to swim while you're wearing shoes is a strange feeling.
It really is.
Yeah.
Like that's what sticks out of my mind. Like, wow, I don't know if I've ever done this before, but it was startling. I've never been tossed. I've been whitewater rafting. I managed to stay in the kayak during Class 4 rapids, but not during this little turbulent area.
Yeah. If we had to like judge these out of like 1 to 5, it would probably be like a 1.5.
Like a rapid.
There was no reason why I fell out of it. I don't know how it happened, but it did.
Yeah, I remember our guide who was in front, obviously, and he like gave us a little bit of a heads up. He's like, just casual heads up. These are some mild rapids. You'll be fine, but just separate. Yeah. And then I was like behind him. And then like I hear like a slow motion splash. And then next thing I know, you're swimming to shore.
I love it. It was such a fun trip.
And yeah, and I can only imagine too, because I remember how cold that water was, because we had all like immediately prior to this been at that big boulder or whatever, and we're like taking turns jumping off into the water. So,
oh yeah,
it was cold.
Yeah, it was.
Like much colder than I thought it would be.
Yeah, that was fun.
that was really fun.
Yeah, but after we spent a couple of minutes on that rock jumping off of it, we went over to that trail, and that's where we were introduced to Hiker's Lemonade, like we were talking about earlier in the episode. What was your favorite part of that trail, I guess?
Well, I guess my favorite part of it was being able to just like pick vegetation off of the ground and eating it. That's what I remember the most anyway. The Hiker's Lemonade looks like these little, like almost like four-leaf clovers just growing on the ground. And we were told that we could just pick them up and eat them. So we did. And they taste remarkably like lemonade, which I couldn't get enough of. I was like stuffing them in my mouth.
I know, same.
And then 24 hours later, all of our mouths are broken out with poison ivy.
Yeah.
Because we grabbed the wrong one.
Yeah, the guy's like, JK, no, that was poison ivy. Yeah.
Cannot digest this.
Right. That I know, that was so good. I can't get over that. I remember like, because it's very unnatural, seemingly, as a human being, like, to be told while you're hiking through the middle of the woods to, like, you know, reach down and just eat something growing off the forest floor. And I'm like, I don't do this normally.
No. But is this what foraging is?
Is this what foraging is? Yeah.
I love it.
I felt like a woodland animal, you know?
Yeah.
And it was great.
I felt like I could survive out in the woods by myself.
Yes. Yeah. I'm like, I could live here. I could live off this.
Yes.
I could eat only this and be fine.
Just Hiker's Lemonade. Yeah.
So, I wish I had some, to be honest. I wish they sold it in stores.
Yeah. Same. I know. I agree.
My favorite.
So, Brian, on our podcast, we talk about our favorite things. We have not told each other. They are surprises. And while this isn't the end of this episode, what we wanted to do is we want to bring you on to this tradition of ours to tell us what our favorite things are and share with everybody.
Mm. Yeah.
And so
I am honored.
So, Brian, what was your favorite part of this trip?
Yeah, the whole thing, all of Redwood.
Oh, geez. Well, I mean, the kayak trip was a highlight. That might be my favorite part of the trip, but I'm going to condense it down even further and say that the rock that we stopped at and jumped off of into the water, I have very distinct, great memories of that. One, mainly because Whitney, my now wife, took an unexpected plunge into the freezing cold water.
Right.
I didn't get to see it. I just heard her screams.
Same. I didn't see it either, but I heard the splash.
Everyone just like turned around and like, Whitney?
Like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently
she had parked her kayak and was trying to step up onto the rock, but lost her footing and just like jumped back into the water, which was great.
Yeah.
I loved seeing it. But in addition to that, we all jumped in, which was fun. But then Brad surprised everyone with a front flip off of this huge boulder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was kind of like almost like a front cartwheel flip. I kind of curved, but it was fun because in my mind I looked great. And this is what I was saying earlier.
I think
I just
it did
felt
look
like
great.
I looked great.
It did. And then I took a video.
I looked at the video and I'm like, ooh.
And I'm pretty sure, didn't our guide, wasn't he like, wow, can we use that for our website or something?
Oh, he did. That's right.
He said something like that. Like, this is how we're going to sell this kayak trip. You're flip off this rock.
Oh, well, I'll have to forward that video on to him.
He's been waiting for like a year.
Yeah. He's like,
actually, 3 years?
That was a great part of that trip. I mean, the whole kayak thing was really, really amazing, but that part was really fun. I just remember being like so utterly shocked by how cold the water was. I wasn't properly warned. Our guide did not. He says, like, oh, sure, jump in. He didn't say, like, by the way, it's deathly cold. Like, you're going to.
Your chest is going to shut down.
Right.
Yeah.
And
I assume you got some kind of sick pleasure out of seeing us experience that.
Yeah. And our faces after each of us jumped in and, like,
definitely
panic swam to the rock. But yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was.
What was yours?
My favorite. I think my favorite was probably after this kayak trip, we did this longer hike through Redwoods.
Yes.
And that was really fun. I don't think you liked it as much because you were hiking in like water shoes.
Yeah, that was just a miserable time because I didn't have socks on. I had wet water shoes. It was really bad.
Oh, yeah, man. Not ideal. But yeah, because it was a longer
hike. But I
would
have loved that one. That's the one with all the switchbacks.
Yeah, that one had more switchbacks and it was like up and down. We went through and over some creeks, but the trees in there were just like mind-blowing. There was just such a like condensed variety of them here. There was so much. And it was, I think, the longest or one of the longer hikes we did in Redwood too. So it was nice to spend some quality time like in the like deep in the woods like this. And especially after the kayak trip where I'm like, okay, it'd be nice to like use our legs again.
Was that the trail that we walked through like a hollowed out redwood tree?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We crawled through it, didn't we? It was like the tree was wide enough and mostly hollow that like we're able to crawl through the entire length of it pretty much. Yeah.
There was like caves inside of trees.
It was like a tree cave, yeah.
Because there's so like these trees are just so huge that you don't realize like you could create a home inside of them. Like at least the size of our RV.
I could live in there and just eat hiker's lemonade and make it my home.
Perfect.
Right.
I know where I'm investing.
They're like Disney World attractions. And you realize, well, I guess Disney's basing it off of something. It's real life here.
Yeah.
That comes clear. That comes through like super clear.
Absolutely. I think my favorite thing would actually be like, honestly, it wasn't a place. It was just the ability to do this trip all together with my family. Like I loved like spending the time with you guys, with Donald, Whitney, Emily, Brian, Matt, myself. It was just one of those really awesome times where we get to connect and see each other and just like go through it. Live and cook together and kayak and hike. It was all just about the ability to do it as a family. That was really cool to me.
Mm, yeah, beautiful.
That's very nice.
Mm-hmm.
So Brian, ultimately at the end of the day, what did you get out of this trip?
Well, I guess a big thing that I got out of this trip was surprising this country, I guess this world can still be. Like you go to a place like Redwood National Park, which you've heard about and you've seen pictures of redwoods, but to actually be there and to see these like massive trees that look like they're from, I don't know, some giant's world in Lord of the Rings or something is humbling because you're just this minuscule little thing compared to these huge trees, but it's just incredible. And it just makes you, and it makes me curious to explore as much of the world as I can, because this is just a tiny little part of it. And you know that there's other stuff like this out there.
Absolutely.
Love that.
That's why we keep on traveling to national parks.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Matt.
And I'm Brad. This is Parklandia.
And today's episode is about Redwood National and State Parks in California.
So three things that we would bring. You know, we definitely would probably start off with a kayak for myself, at least. But we don't own one, so I guess I would have to buy one first. But just in case, there's definitely a lot of different places to rent kayaks from or do tours from. So don't worry. If you don't have a kayak like myself, you can definitely get one.
Plenty of options for that. And then to go along with that, some sort of wetsuit or water-resistant layer like we wore when we went kayaking.
Absolutely. Because those water shoes, too.
Water shoes, yeah. Yes. But because I think that's also important for kayaking. And then if you're in certain areas of the park, You could use it when you go tide pooling along the coast, which is also a great idea in and of itself because you can see animals like sea stars and crabs, sea cucumbers, mussels, another ecosystem.
Yes. And then, of course, because when you're done kayaking, you're going to need dry socks and dry shoes.
Right.
I didn't do that, and I went on a trail afterwards, and I was miserable.
You were.
So that's definitely something I've learned from this trip, is to always make sure you have extra clothes to change into, especially if you're doing kayaking.
Yeah, a dry backup. And this is one of those parks where, within the span of one afternoon or just a full day, you can do totally different activities, like we did. We went kayaking the first half of the day and then went right from there to a long hike. So both of those activities require different sets of attire and especially footwear. So to have a full backup at the ready is really helpful.
Yes. And of course, we could bring Trekking at the National Parks board game along with extra friends because you have to have a lot of friends to play that.
Yes,
you don't, but
right.
We love that. We love sharing that memory with friends.
That's a good one. And then also at this park, if you're in a board game mood, you should bring, we have like a Jurassic Park board game.
Oh, that's
you
know right. That?
And what better place to play it than the park where one of those movies was literally filmed. So just continue with that theme. And speaking of Jurassic Park, I know that we've talked about that franchise a lot on this podcast, but I think it's safe to say that Redwood National and State Parks is really the episode where it makes the most sense because this is a place that is so unbelievably beautiful that one of the movies, The Lost World, was literally filmed here.
And not only that, but this incredible place has been featured in Star Wars, Netflix movies, and now our own family photos.
Yeah, lots of family photos. It's forever engraved in our most cherished memories and in our DVD collection.
You've been listening to Parklandia, a show about national parks.
Parklandia is a production of iHeartRadio.
Created by Matt Kerouac, Brad Kerouac, and Christopher Haziotis.
Produced and edited by Mike Johns.
Our executive producer is Christopher Haziotis.
Our researcher is Jesslyn Shields.
A special thanks goes out to Gabriel Collins, Crystal Waters, and the rest of the Parklandia crew.
And hey, listeners, if you're enjoying the show, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps other people like you find our show.
You can keep up with us on social media as well. Check out our photos from our travels on Instagram at Parklandia Pod and join in on the conversation in our Facebook group, Parklandia Rangers.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
And as always, thank you for listening.
I'm Johnny B. Good, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My whole life, I've been told this one story about my family, about how my great-great-grandmother was killed by the mafia back in Sicily. I was never sure if it was true, so I decided to find out. And even though my Uncle Jimmy told me I'd only be making the vendetta worse, I'm going to Sicily anyway. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.